The Audio Choke on MMAtorch.com. You're listening to it right now. Download it on iTunes. It's free. You'll really enjoy it. Like every single week.
I'm Greg Rowan.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
And I'm Matt Collins. All right, well, let's get into a good roundtable discussion about everything mixed martial arty.
Well, I don't think we have to do that anymore. We've actually got things to talk about again.
Oh, good. What do we have? News?
Well, there was an event over the weekend, and then there's another event this weekend. We're back on schedule.
Yeah.
So let's run down what happened. All I saw was the fantastic highlight reel finish, but I didn't see anything else.
There was
that
a Strikeforce Challenges card Friday night, but I mean, really, all you need to know is that Sarah Kaufman powerbombed Roxanne Modafari into unconsciousness, and it was the best thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. Maybe. Now, while I can't say I've really seen a whole lot of female fights, I've seen a number of them now, and I think this is the first time I've ever seen one woman knock another girl unconscious completely. You know, like Cyborg doesn't even really do that. She unleashes these huge flurries that leave people completely battered and dazed, but they're not like sleeping on the floor afterwards.
Yeah, I mean,
over the weekend, I said out loud that women don't have the finishing power to knock out their opponent, but they can take so much more damage. Like their pain threshold is greater than that of a man's. And then a woman stepped to me, so
yeah,
right.
Got my ass knocked out. Obviously,
yeah. Clearly, Sarah Kaufman was responding directly to you. But, she made a good point in that I think her last three fights had gone to decision, and there had been some issues about her being still on a challenger's card, even though she's the 135 champion, and she was on a challenger's card, which is not Strikeforce's main cards.
No,
it's like their Friday night. Oh yeah, there's some MMA stuff on, and she wasn't even in the main event of that.
Ouch.
So she had caused a ruckus a bit before and after her fight. She kind of, you know, was like, hey, I'd like to be on, like, you know, a main card would be nice. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
And
I'm not going to grow any boy parts, though.
Not going to grow any boy parts or put on 10 pounds. So good for her. And, yeah, I mean, we could get into a whole discussion about, you know, treating champs and belts special and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, I think she had a good point, and she emphasized that with the powerbomb knockout coming towards the end of round three in the Strikeforce 135 women's bout. I mean, it was looking like it was going to go to a decision that she probably would have taken, honestly. I think Roxanne Modafari won, like, the first round, probably, and then Sarah Kaufman kind of got back into her groove before. I mean, it was really, I think, the last 20, 30 seconds of the third round when she got that powerbomb from an armbar attempt.
Yeah, now it sounds like it was a pretty competitive fight up until that point.
There was a lot of clinch work, and I think Modafari got a takedown or two. But, yeah, it was good back and forth. I mean, Kaufman was clearly getting the better of the stand-up, but Modafari was hanging in there, and, you know, again, a lot of clinching back and forth kind of negate some of Kaufman's superior stand-up. I mean, until that point, it was a good back and forth match. I really enjoyed it. And, Matt, you mentioned it, Greg. Yeah, I can't really recall seeing a women's fight. Nope, there's one. Misha Tate getting head kicked in the face like 4 or 5 years ago, I think, is the only other like KO I can really remember, I think.
Okay, well, that'll
do it, too.
But,
yeah, there's just not a lot out there, and I think a lot of that is, well, there's not as many women's fights, first of all. But, yeah, just anecdotally, yeah, I don't think it happens as much. And I don't know why that is, you know. Matt said
I threw out something sexist, yeah. You know, and controversial. Yeah. Not exactly sure if I believe that, yeah. But that is a point of view that somebody could have.
You'd probably lose your mind if you found out Sarah Kaufman could vote, too, huh?
What?
Yeah, I think it just has to do with the size issue. I mean, yeah, I've said it before. You look at male fighters at 135, mm-hmm. There are exceptions, but those guys aren't really known for their one-punch knockout power either.
Right, yeah.
So I think, really, that has a lot to do with it. We generally think of the man, you know, like, you know, any one punch can do it, but, you know, these guys are fighting at like 185, 205, 265. The male fighters are just bigger, and
yeah.
With the size comes strength.
Right, yeah, I don't think it's a gender thing. I do think it's a size thing. So that's actually a good point. I think it does relate to the weight class. Other than that, I mean, it was a pretty, you know, and believe it or not, the championship fight ended with a KO slam powerbomb. Or whatever the technical name for it. It's a powerbomb, right?
Yeah.
There's not like an actual name for that other than what we know from pro wrestling, right?
Big slam!
That's not like a legit college wrestling move or anything like that?
No, I would hope not.
That's, yeah. But, you know, after that we had the main event. Shane Del Rosario beating up Loalahi Mahi in the first round. TKO basically ended it in the clinch, caught him with a pretty nasty, I think it was a pretty nasty knee to the midsection, and that basically ended the fight, and then followed up with some kicks and punches and stuff. But pretty impressive showing for Del Rosario. I would imagine he's going to be moving up in competition. He called out Andrei Arlovsky after the fight, which, you know, if you want to jump into the higher end of, or at least the notable names of Strikeforce heavyweights, someone who's had questions about his chin in the past, and I mean, Andrei Arlovsky is still a pretty well-known name as a good person to get your feet wet in that higher division. And I mean, Del Rosario looked really good kickboxing from what I saw. That was the first time I got to see like a whole fight of his. I've just seen some brief highlights before, but I mean, yeah, I mean, he had really nice looking kickboxing. It was really fast for a guy his size, really crisp. So pretty impressive showing for him as well.
Excellent. Did he wait for the other guy to get tired? Because that was something you were speculating before the fight.
It didn't really go that far, honestly. I mean, he got caught. I mean, Mahi landed a few punches of his own. Definitely, showed he had some power. But I think it was really just a speed and technique factor for Del Rosario. It just really was able to kind of outwork him. I would imagine if it had gone longer than, past the first round, it ended like 3:48 in the first round. I think we probably would have seen the cardio maybe come into play a bit. And that's always the question with heavyweights or the heavier fighters in general, is just, they've got power, they've got, good speed for a guy their size, but what happens once they go out of the first round? And we've seen it on lots of heavyweights where some of them don't have it, some of them do. And I think for someone up and coming like Del Rosario, we don't know yet. But so far, so good for him. No slick. I think he won his fight before this with some ridiculous omoplata or something like that.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah. So they had a highlight of that, and yeah, it was like, that's just not, you're not used to seeing that anyways, especially from and then it was a heavyweight fight, and you're like, oh, that's crazy. So yeah, we'll see if he's moving up from the Strikeforce Challengers card or not, but I would imagine he's going to get some more healthy competition. We'll see. I mean, there's a few bigger names out there in the heavyweight division of Strikeforce, at least. And I mean, he's still undefeated, and put an emphasis on his fight as well.
So. Yeah, well, there's been some talk for a while. I think it was probably mostly from his camp, though, about the fight with Bobby Lashley.
Right.
I don't know if that's the fight that Strikeforce has any desire of putting together, and it sounds like Bobby Lashley doesn't really want it. But
yeah, kind of rumblings of the Lashley's camp had turned it down and stuff, and I don't have an inside ear on any of that, but I mean, just from a matchmaking perspective, you wouldn't want to necessarily put two prospects up against each other. But I mean, I imagine at some point, with the depth issues that Strikeforce has at heavyweight, you're going to have most guys fight each other at some point.
Yeah, especially since neither of them are anywhere near ready for a fight against a guy like Alistair Overeem or even
right.
Fabricio Werdum.
Yeah, so it's going to be well. I mean, I'd like to see that fight come together because I think it'd be a interesting matchup for sure. I mean, we haven't seen Lashley really get tested standing up. I mean, he's primarily a wrestler anyways. So
yeah.
I mean, if he goes against someone who has, really solid stand-up, it could be an interesting problem for him. And, I've only seen a bit of Del Rosario, but, I mean, anyone with good wrestling credentials can be very competitive in MMA and give many fighters, pretty big problems if they can put them on their back and keep them there. So. Other than that, I mean, like the two main fights were really the highlights of the evening. I mean, I think the other fights they showed on air, and there's plenty of other ones, but just the ones I recall from being shown on air. No prelims again, which is showtime. Carlos Fodor, not Fedor.
Fodor.
It's with an O. He took a decision, unanimous decision, over a guy's name who I can't say.
Let's see it.
There you go.
Yeah, not trying it.
Yeah. Osman Thomas Diagne. We'll go with that and pretend it was right.
Yay.
Mike Kyle got a submission rear naked choke in the second round over Ron Obongo Humphrey.
And he felt the need to make a prediction, I hear, for Cain Velasquez over Brock Lesnar.
I'll be honest, I was watching it on DVR and might have not been incredibly awake at the time of this fight, so I didn't hear specifically what he said. But,
that's really about it. He says Cain Velasquez is going to whoop Brock Lesnar's ass.
Yeah, nice. That is weird when, I guess it's not really because they might train together or just have, But it's like guys in different organizations be like, yeah, this guy over here is going to be awesome and stuff. Right. Like, remember, like, Nick Diaz or Nate Diaz, one of the Diaz brothers, like, had a fight, and then afterwards, like, my brother won his last fight. And
yeah.
Stuff. So, you know, it always happens. But, yeah, I mean, Mike Kyle looked pretty good. The thing with this fight, what I remember is there was a weird stand-up in the fight, and then Abongo Humphrey lost within, like, the next minute or two.
Hmm.
So,
was he on top when it was stood up?
I believe he had dominant position and didn't work out so well for him afterwards. I mean, I don't know if he was necessarily winning the fight before that, but at that time he had the dominant position. It was kind of like the ref was like, "You got to work, guys," and they were actually doing stuff, and then he got stood up, and it was.
That does happen sometimes.
Yeah,
and that's how Roy Nelson lost to Andre Arlovsky a few years back, where he. You know, he had dominant position. I don't remember exactly which one it was, but I remember the stand-up was like, whoa, really? They're letting Andre up for this? And then, you know, immediately after that, Arlovsky gets the knockout win.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. I'm trying to look up one of the play-by-play, I think. Let's see here. Yeah, I mean, Abongo Humphrey was working for I'm looking at Bloody Elbows play-by-play, but Humphrey at one point rolled for a heel hook, and then they kind of got out of that, but then he maintained or got back into the guard. He was on top position, and then the ref was like, yep, so you guys should stand up. And then within, the next minute or two, Kyle took his back and choked him out. So that sucks, but it happens.
Yeah, it happens.
And
Mike Kyle will take it, too.
Yeah.
He's dirty. Did you ever see his fight against Wes Sims?
What did he do? What happened?
Yeah. He bit him.
Whoa!
Like, in the chest. Yeah. And Wes Sims was going to, like, show his corner guys the bite mark. And then, Big John restarted the fight while Wes Sims was walking away. And then Mike Kyle just runs over and knocks him out. And then they ask him, like, so did you... Did you bite Wes Sims? And he's like, nah, man, besides, look at all the dirty stuff he's done. Which sounds like an innocent man right there.
I believe the word I was trying to say 80 times poorly was reformed since then.
Oh, okay.
There was no biting in this fight from what I can tell.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm not
maybe
saying
some spitting and name-calling.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's still doing it, but I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yes.
Because, yeah.
I gotcha. Perhaps some Your Mama jokes. I wasn't privy to their
conversation. She sits around the house!
Well, I mean, Josh Koscheck still does that.
Oh, goodness gracious. And now he's a coach on The Ultimate Fighter and getting a title shot. So.
Woo!
Bust out the Your Mama jokes, I guess, is the lesson there. I don't know. Bobby Volker took a split decision over Corey Davala. And that was kind of a... And again, I admit to not being totally like... I wasn't taking notes or like I didn't have my judges' scorecard out. But it was a pretty close fight, but it didn't seem like Volker necessarily like emphatically won the fight, which I guess is why it was a split decision.
Yeah.
But it was just kind of those decisions you're like, oh, I kind of thought the other dude won that. Oh, well.
Rage!
And then the Price is Wrong music played, and you're like, oh. Yeah. Or the foghorn from Inception or whatever, the Wrong.
Is that it?
You guys haven't seen the movie, have you?
No.
I know what a foghorn is, though.
Right. Yeah. So, overall, I mean, it was a pretty decent card, I thought. I mean, Challengers cards are always kind of iffy. Sometimes they're pretty dreadful, and sometimes, I mean, like this, it was a pretty good night. Got to see some decent prospects and, a champ who's...
A champ? Not a lot of people watched it, though?
That's actually more people watch this than I think the last couple ones. It got like 200-something thousand viewers, which is good for a Strikeforce Challengers card. Kaufman's last fight was the main event and got 150,000 viewers like that. And that was really the issue going into this. Again, to get back to that point, I mean, she had like written a blog earlier in the week before her fight, basically complaining about being on this Challengers card, and then it got into like a bunch of comments and reports and stuff about like the business of MMA. You know, it's like, yeah, it's a sport, but it's also, it depends on viewerships and all that. And people literally walked out of her last fight. It was a 5-round decision, and it was kind of boring and plodding, and you knew she was going to win after the first or second round. And it wasn't watched by a lot of people, and like live reports from the arena were just like, yeah, so people just are leaving, which is not what you want in your main event.
No, that sucks.
So clearly from like a business perspective or like, you know, drawing viewers' perspective, you can kind of see why she got put in that secondary slot even on the challengers card. But from a sporting perspective or from like, you know, just like the fan perspective of like, you got to treat your champs like they're champs, it's kind of like, yeah.
I don't know. Why do you have to treat your champs like your champs?
So people take them seriously?
I guess. Right? Silva, though, you know, like that's a guy that's getting getting some stern talkings twos, you know. Maybe he'll be thrown on undercard if he doesn't ship up and fly right.
Yeah, Dana White said that right before he almost had a heart attack, but Anderson Silva's main eventing his next fight.
But so. He's going to lose, so it's okay.
Right, right. Because Chael Sonnen's going to, like, do something that no one's ever done to him before or whatever.
Yeah, right. Chael's figured it
Chael
out.
Chael Sonnen, who's lost to Jeremy Horn and, you know, Damian Maia and... Because, I mean, I certainly don't want to throw MMA math in there, but we're getting ahead of ourselves predicting that fight, but we'll get there eventually.
We'll see.
If it's a war on Twitter, I think Chael Sonnen clearly would win.
Chael Sonnen has clearly already won that.
Yeah, he's won he's won the talking war already. Yeah, he's got it down. He's got to win the actual fight.
So. Well, I think now, if anything, Kaufman has more of a... more of a bargaining chip, you know, with a huge knockout like that.
Yeah,
you know?
She made SportsCenter, I believe. Yeah, top 10. I don't know. I don't watch SportsCenter. They do a top 10 thing. And like, hey, look at all these wacky sports things that happened.
Boing.
Right. And they're like, look at this amazing baseball dive. And huge. Another one. And another one. Also an awesome powerbomb.
Yeah. From a lady. So I think she's got a pretty good bargaining chip right now just to see where her next fight goes with it. You know, like maybe they'll give her a shot. Or maybe they'll just sweep her underneath the rug and, you know...
Keep her on the... Yeah,
we'll never see her again.
Yeah, I mean, they could keep her on the...
It depends on how Strikeforce likes the way she's talking, you know?
Yeah, definitely, and how she draws and stuff. But, I mean, it does sound like this fight drew better, and she actually... her fight, I guess I was reading some online reports. I guess Bloody Elbow had a link to it, I know, that, you know, her fight was actually... the viewership for that fight was higher than the main event. So that's something there to be like, hey, I told you guys so, stop being mean and stuff, or whatever. But interesting, it sounds like she's going to be fighting Marlos Kunin next, who previously fought for the women's 145 belt against Chris Cyborg. And they're also doing like a women's 135 one-night tournament, I believe, to determine a number one contender for a future title shot. It was kind of unclear whether they're like, so does the winner of the tournament get the title shot first, and then Marlos Kunin fights the winner of that fight, or what? But so they're actually like, you know, planning ahead for the women's 135 division, which is weird that the division with, you know, the most planning is on their Showtime, like, Friday night fights card.
Well, I think she's probably going to step up to the main show on this one after, you know, such a highlight reel knockout and all that stuff. And one thing that I think might be interesting idea for Strikeforce is put a card with Sarah Kaufman and Cyborg on it, you know, in separate fights, but just like have that night, you know, they can have maybe a main event with a more established male draw of some sort, but you know, really spend the night like kind of showcasing the women's MMA.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, certainly one thing. I mean. Like, it'd be weird, because I know Chris Cyborg and Gina Carano headlined a Showtime, like, you know, a big Showtime card, and that was one of their, I think, their most popular event. And, you know, honestly, I still don't see, like, a women's MMA, like, championship match or whatever still being, like, you know, highlighted or main eventing, like, a CBS card. I don't even know if Showtime or Strikeforce is going to be on CBS anymore. But certainly, I mean, put them on, you know, lower down on the fight and just kind of, it is kind of like a showcase there, and, you know, put people on there who are going to get some eyeballs and... If for no other reason than we talked about it before, but women's MMA is still kind of a novelty to a lot of mainstream, like, I mean, because the people still kind of figuring out this MMA thing from the mainstream perspective.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something, and we've talked about it, but it's something that actually makes Strikeforce stand out, you know, because, you know, every MMA promotion has, you know, plenty of fighters and stuff. But, I mean, the UFC, they have something the UFC doesn't, and that's good female, well, it's female fighters. You know, they have good female fighters. They have some depth, and, you know, I think it's something that Strikeforce and Bellator in their upcoming season of fights is also going to have female fighters. So it's something to, you know, you want it to be quality fights, but it's something you can put out there. Like, hey, this is a little different than UFC. This is how we're differentiating ourselves. So I think they have some opportunities there.
And it's really something they can exploit, I think, to a much greater potential than they do at this point. Because, I mean, right now, the UFC undisputedly has... the best fighters in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Strikeforce has the best women's fighters. I mean, UFC right. doesn't even touch that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Strikeforce has essentially the best female fighter in the world, as far as I know, in Cyborg. And they've got a bunch of other ones that are probably, I mean, better than what Bellator has to offer now. They're doing like a 115-pound tournament.
Right. There's actually some pretty good fighters there, but it's a lot of, you know, yeah, hardcore Japanese MMA.
Yeah, but Cyborg would crush them.
Well, yeah, it's different weight classes.
Yeah, but people always like the higher weight classes.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But basically, as far as the American viewing public knows, aside from like people who are like hardcore forum, you know, internet, you know, watching pirated Japanese MMA at like 3 in the morning, yeah, Chris Cyborg and Sarah Coffin are like two of the best women's MMA fighters, and people are always going to, you know, throw some other names out there. But yeah, I mean, in America, those are far and away. And I think, honestly, Sarah Coffin, at least from who she competes against, competitively has had stiffer competition. I mean, there's more depth to the women's 135
yeah,
division.
Because yeah.
I mean,
it's gotten a lot better. You know, mm-hmm. every year it's getting yeah. better. And the fights this year, yeah. women wise, you know, been pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, we like with the weight thing we talked about with Chris Cyborg's last fight. I mean, you know, she's fighting people who are not naturally 145 pound fighters. You know, so and there's not as much of that being an issue at 135, which is kind of nice. That's all I got to say about that. All
right.
Woo! And that's the end of that chapter.
Ding!
Okay. So where are we off to
please
now?
Turn the page in your audiobook? I don't know. I guess UFC on Versus this weekend, huh?
Oh, snap.
Woo! John Jones versus the janitor Vladimir Matyushenko. I almost said his last name right, but then I didn't.
Almost. Bummer.
But, I mean, I think I got close, which is always good. Yeah, and then also Mark Munoz versus Yushin Okami, Jake Ellenberger versus John Howard, and Takanori Gomi versus Tyson Griffin on the main card.
Hmm.
Which, that's their second outing on Versus, the UFC being on Versus, and they're going to be in San Diego, which is...
Yeah, weren't they originally going to be in Utah, but then the Mormons chased them out?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
We'll just say it was the Mormons.
Yeah, those damn Mormons.
Yeah.
Hey, I hear Big John's back.
Yeah, that's yeah, that's the that's the nice thing about being like a kind of a geeky MMA fan is like, yeah, I mean the fights are cool and I want to see those, but like Big John McCarthy coming back to a UFC event is kind of a big deal. Like he was blacklisted basically. I mean, not blacklisted because the UFC does not control the state athletic commissions and has no say over who gets to ref which fights. But, yeah, no, Big John McCarthy hasn't been around a UFC event for a while, and it sounds like he's going to be on the UFC on Versus card.
Well, it's in California. He's licensed yeah. in California, so it seems reasonable. He's not licensed in Nevada, but, you know, they were the people that he was talking smack about,
mm-hmm.
and they're apparently a little butthurt about it. But, you know, it's good to see him in a UFC event. It's the first time since late 2007.
Right.
So, yeah, that's cool. I'll take him over Steve Mazzagatti any day.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to, like, you know, get involved with, like, oh, you know, he got in trouble with Dana White and get into the politics of it all. But, I mean, really, John McCarthy is one of the best MMA refs there are. I mean, there's not a lot of good ones out there, and it's come a long way. But, I mean, he's been there for a long, long time. And, yeah, I mean, he really is one of the best referees out there. So to have him involved, like, not being involved in the UFC for so long, at UFC events for so long, was just kind of bizarre, and you know they made it work obviously, and you know guys like Herb Dean and some other people have really stepped up, but it's
yeah,
I'm getting all nostalgic is basically what's happening.
Yeah,
memories.
Yeah. I'm wondering if this is going to allow him to, you know, kind of work his way back into perhaps Nevada, because yeah. that's a pretty important market for the UFC.
Yes, it is. It's their market.
Yeah,
sure. I mean that's really
well. The whole world is their market,
right? But I mean they kind of like own the whole like Las Vegas scene for the most part. I mean, as far as you know, they've had obviously some WC cards on there, but that's Zuffa. But I mean you don't hear a lot of other MMA promotions having like huge events in Vegas, probably because the Fertittas scare them off or something.
That's right.
They accidentally get a production truck lit on fire. I don't know. Something happens.
Somebody gets run over by their own car.
Yeah.
27 times.
Falls down an elevator shaft onto some bullets. Whatever. A lot of things can happen in Vegas, is all. So the fight's on Versus.
Yeah, I'm going to make a bold prediction and say John Jones is going to win.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Crazy, right?
Stepping it up.
You mean the more versatile fighter who's, you know, younger and more athletic and has more of an upshot is, yeah. I mean, Matchstanker's got good wrestling, and he's kind of a guy who smothers people, so there's always that chance, but John Jones has got good wrestling, and, you know, even if he goes to the ground, he's got some serious elbows, as long as he uses them properly and not illegally. He can cause some big trouble.
Well, my thing on this fight is, while John Jones may be bigger, stronger, faster, and more athletic, he also has all kinds of ridiculous moves that he can attack you with, like spinning back elbows and, you know, crazy tackles with elbows to the face that will break your orbital bone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the janitor has played a role in upsetting people in the past. He really only has a few losses on his record, and they are to some pretty good people. But John Jones is pretty good, so I'm going to give it to him.
And he's so young, it really weirds me out. He is, I think he's 23.
No!
Or something ridiculous like that. And he's obviously way more accomplished than any of us will ever be. So
hey, yeah. You know, he's got his thing, we've got our thing.
Yeah.
Let's see him do this.
He can probably do this.
Well, for like the amount of episodes that we've got, he's got a lot of commitments right now.
Yeah. It's interesting, Greg, you mentioned his kind of unorthodox moves and the spinning back flying somersault elbows or whatever. And I agree, those are definitely an interesting a neat part of his arsenal that kind of have helped out. But every time I watch him, like, one of these days someone's going to catch him with it, because it's I used to play basketball when I was younger, so I guess the way I hark back to it, they're like, you know, everyone knows the proper way to shoot a basketball, but everyone does it differently, and, you know, you're supposed to, like, kind of, you know, like, the elevator in front and shoot it up and everything, but, like, people throw it from, like, the side of their head and, like, all these weird techniques, and the coach is like, oh, you're doing it wrong. You're like, but it works, you know, but it's that thing is like, well, you're doing it, not that he's doing anything wrong, but just like, okay, this is the way things, it's unorthodox, and there's more of a chance, like, it's high-risk, high-reward moves, I guess is trying what I'm getting to. So there's the chance for it to just go horribly wrong sometime, and someone will, like, tiger uppercut him or something like that at an inopportune moment when he throws a flying back something.
Yeah.
So
but until,
you know what,
until that happens.
Exactly.
Even
exactly.
When that happens, it's going to be amazing.
It'll be awesome. It'll be a great highlight reel. But, yeah, it's just one of those things you're like, yeah, I mean, he's, you know, he's got good fundamentals and everything, too. But, I mean, there's some stuff you're like, you know, I remember his Brandon Vera fight. I mean, he was just leaving his arm out there all day for, like, you know, could have gotten arm barred or something like that. So it's one of those things like, okay, is he doing a trade-off or what? But, yeah, I mean, he's really exciting to watch, and he's got those great moves, which are a lot of fun. And, again, until it stops working, why change the formula?
Yeah, and I don't think Matyushenko is the guy to make him pay for one of those mistakes. I mean, Matyushenko's big strength is going to be the wrestling, mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's going to have to win takedowns over 3 rounds unless, you know, Jones gets tired or something, which I don't really expect that to happen either. I mean, because he's gone the full 15 minutes in the past. I see no reason why he wouldn't be able to. But, yeah, I don't see a whole lot of advantages that Matyushenko has other than the experience, but, you know, that only helps you so far. And, you know, basically everyone else John Jones has fought had the edge in experience as well.
Right.
And I don't really see a whole lot of things that Matyushenko offer that, you know, like Matt Hamill didn't really offer him either. I don't really feel that this is a step up for Jones compared to his last two fights.
Mm-hmm.
Although I didn't really feel that Brandon Vera was as big of a step up as it was hyped to be.
Right, right.
Because, you know, I mean, I think Matt Hamill is arguably probably his biggest win and will probably continue to be his biggest win after this fight.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I fully expect to see him win this one. He, one thing you said, I watched a video he was talking about all these unorthodox moves. He learns them from YouTube, apparently.
Yes.
Which means we have a chance too, Matt.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah. Can he incorporate Keyboard Cat
into
his...
A lot of sound effects today, everybody. A lot of sound effects.
Great. Yeah, no, I agree. I'm picking John Jones in this fight. I think he's going to win it. You know, it's just like always in the back of my head. Like, his spinning back hook heel kick is going to go wrong one day.
It's going to backfire.
I'm not waiting for it to happen. I just kind of, like, you know...
You expect it to happen.
There's a reason you don't see those moves a lot in MMA is because eventually you get Uriah Faber'd and you go for a flying jumping elbow and get KTFO'd.
Yeah, you get uppercutted.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work too well for you.
Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, what does Matyushenko have to offer that some of these other guys haven't? I think it is, like you kind of mentioned, the experience, you know. You know, just Jon Jones getting more fights in against kind of seasoned veterans, and you know the UFC kind of grooming him and putting him against guys who can give him trouble, but that he shouldn't, you know, that aren't overwhelming for him. It's interesting because I think the whole you know, does he have to have a step up in every fight, or can it be kind of like he's just fighting, you know, good, decent fighters every time, and then eventually, you know, when he's had, you know, some more experience, then he'll get that next shot. But I don't know. Is it? Do you think expectations are too high for him, maybe, with you know, people just expecting, like, oh, well, he'll win this fight and then he'll get a championship shot, or what?
I don't think necessarily he needs to be beelined straight for the title,
yeah.
But the way he's just been demolishing people,
right.
I don't see any reason why you need to put Matyushenko in front of him. Mm-hmm. I mean, what did Vladdy do to deserve this?
Three-round decisions in his last three fights.
Yeah.
But he won them all.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. That makes it better. But, I mean, this guy is destroying people that are on the level for him to be, you know, dealing with. And mm-hmm. It's pretty unprecedented for you to completely destroy people in front of you and just kind of stay there. Usually, you know, that moves you closer, even if you're not, like, flying towards the title.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying he should be fighting Shogun, especially since Shogun is injured. And he shouldn't necessarily be fighting Rampage next or Lyoto Machida.
Right.
But maybe just kind of a step in the direction would be warranted. I mean, Dana White said that he considers Jon Jones to be right around the top five. Hmm. And, you know, I don't know where he would consider Vladimir Matyushenko to be. Probably not all that
five.
Close, though.
Yeah. Well, he's an old Pride guy, so Dana White obviously hates him.
Mm-hmm. But, you know. Well, he was an old UFC guy, too. He lost to Tito Ortiz like 10 years ago.
Oh, good Tito.
Yeah. Back when Tito wins meant something.
Yeah, not when Tito had made up discs in his back that got injured and stuff.
Oh, the discs exist.
That was real. It happened. Okay. Fair enough. We'll move on. I don't have any deep thoughts on Jake Ellenberger and John Howard.
Yeah.
You know, we could try and make up stuff about how we think they're going to do and all that. But, I mean, just, you know, Ellenberger coming off of a win over Mike Pyle, TKO punches, back in January.
Okay.
Before that, took a loss to Carlos Condit. That was a pretty good fight. I think he had Condit in trouble several times. I mean, they ended up
that is Condit, though.
Right, yeah. He weathers a storm and then ekes it out, you know.
Yeah, let's check out that other guy.
Yes, John Howard. His Sherdog Fight Finder photo was pretty awesome in that his hair was styled in flames.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That was, doesn't take much to impress us.
Oh, that's pretty neat.
Oh, I've seen this guy before. Yeah. He's,
Yeah, Doomsday. We know John Howard. Just, like, trying to, like, off the top of my head, like, oh, well, in his last fight, he totally did this and this and this. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
He fought on the last UFC on Versus card, though, with a KO win over Daniel Roberts in first round of that fight.
Looks like he's coming off quite a win streak.
Yes.
Not bad.
Yeah, I'm comfortable in saying he's undefeated in the UFC.
Yeah.
Looking at his
record. Seems reasonable.
But, yeah, I mean, hasn't lost.
Dan Miller.
Yeah, back in 07. So,
yeah, I'm going to go with this guy.
Yeah. But he's got fire hair in
this
photo. This is probably from, like, 5 years ago or whatever. But, yeah, I don't know.
He beat Tandem McCroy.
Dennis Hallman, Chris Wilson, Charlie Brennan. Yeah. Really, I think I might just flip a quarter. I'm not going to lie.
No, I'm already going with John Howard.
All right. Jake Ellenberger is heads. John Howard is tails. So I pick Jake Ellenberger to win this fight.
All right. Matt?
I will get Jake Ellenberger. Right. I don't know, actually. I wasn't really paying attention. The flame-haired guy.
That's John Howard.
John Howard!
All right.
Give me 50 cents on him.
Yeah. Now a fight we can actually talk about with some sort of level of like familiarity. Takanori Gomi versus Tyson Griffin. I'm pretty comfortable in taking Griffin in this fight.
Yeah, it seems pretty reasonable to me.
Gomi's got heavy hands, but, like, just technique. I mean, he's just one of those guys, like, the game seems to have just passed him by.
Yeah, well, I mean, he survived to the third round with Florian, but Florian was also beating him at his own game before deciding to finish him off. And while Florian has got better stand-up than Tyson Griffin, I don't think Tyson Griffin would necessarily bother standing up with Gomi. I mean, he likes to stand, he likes to, you know, throw some punches and all, but he's a wrestler at heart. I would think he would put Gomi on his back pretty quickly if he wants to be intelligent about it.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a few submissions on his record as well, but yeah, I mean, there's no reason for him to basically play into Gomi's only possible way of winning, which would be kind of, you know, getting into a sloppy stand-up exchange.
Yeah, which I do see as a possibility, so I do want to just throw that little asterisk on there that if he decides to be an idiot, which does happen, then he may lose. But even then, he's still got a decent chance because he's got a good chin.
Yeah, it is always weird. Like, we see it with plenty of fighters. Fighters who are very good or very well-rounded, that sort of thing, or, you know, have phenomenal or very solid ground games, and they're like, yeah, but punching's fun.
Yeah, well, they want to knock out the striker. You know, somebody's known for being, you know, a really good, really technical, even just like, you know, a really all-around dangerous striker, people want to, you know, prove that they got the cojones and the ability that even though, yeah, I could have taken him to the ground and you know, worked my game there, I decided to knock him out.
Yeah.
And, you know, it does work sometimes, but a lot of times it doesn't work too well.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly something to be said for that, but I always think of, I think he's in Strikeforce now, George Gurgel, who's like, you know, like a jiu-jitsu black belt, but you'd never know it because all he does is stand in front of people and get punched a lot and punch back very hard.
Well, I think his thing is more of the business aspect of the sport.
Bonus where, money, man.
Yeah, bonus money. I mean, a lot like the Chris Lytle thing, where he's like, well, you know, if I lose exciting, I'll still have a job. But if I lose boring, I'm not going to have the job. So if you're going to be boring, you better win. And, you know, you're not always going to win, so it's better to be exciting than to win sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
That said, you know, it's probably better to win.
Yeah, I mean, certainly from the fighting perspective, like, it's a good point for them to be, like, I guess kind of stay positive, first of all, but, to, like, yeah, money's pretty important for them. But, it is weird, I mean, because none of us really, you know, it'd be interesting to get into, like, a fighter's head and figure that out, you know, because I think, you know, just from an outsider's perspective, like, yeah, winning's kind of important in a sport. Like, it's actually the most important thing, you know, as long as you're not, you know, cheating or juicing or anything like that. I mean, you know, Vladimir Marchenko, you know, takes decisions all day long. Doesn't matter because you're getting wins.
Yeah, well, I mean, it all depends probably a lot on your pay scale.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at a guy like Chris Lytle, who, I mean, I don't have his pay scale memorized on the top of my head. Let's say, you know, he gets 30 to show, 30 to win. He'll triple that if he gets a bonus.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, if he loses but gets fight of the night, he's walking home with like $100,000. If he wins but doesn't get a bonus, he gets $60,000. And, you know, if you get fight of the night, it doesn't matter if you lost. You're not going to get fired. The
right.
UFC's not going to get rid of you after that. So, you know, guys like him who are pretty consistently exciting will always have that kind of job security, much like Vanderlei Silva, who, you know, he probably coasts by a lot on his name.
Yeah.
You know, just because he had such a reign of terror and pride for 6 years. But his start in the UFC was dismal. He got knocked out by Rampage when he was coming off two losses. He beat Keith Jardine, but then he lost his next fight against Rich Franklin, and it's just like, you know, is this guy even, like, worth keeping? But, you know, he's Vanderlei Silva, for one. You know, he's got the name. But also, it's just like, he puts on really fun fights. Even when he loses, it's fun as hell to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they'll keep you around for a long time.
Yeah. He comes to bang, yeah, so there's something to be said for that. I was going to move on to the next fight, but the internet just crashed on me.
Oh, no.
But I did see, I know Jacob Volkman, I think Jacob Volkman and Paul Kelly are one of the undercard fights, which that should be a pretty interesting matchup. Paul Kelly is another one of those fighters who kind of, you know, for better or worse, is kind of willing to stand and bang. And
yes, and Volkman is Christmas.
Yeah, and he's got he's really solid grappling, but he's, you know, I think we've seen in the last couple of his fights, you know, he's really got to do a lot to work on a stand-up to not, you know, I mean.
Well, his last two fights were against Paulo Thiago and Martin Kampmann, which is, you know,
pretty
that's not
hitters,
too easy
yeah.
fights to take.
Right. So, but I mean, he's got really solid grappling, so you can't ever count out a guy with a good ground game, you know. It's still, I think, you know, obviously taking punches is important. Avoiding getting punched directly in the face is also good, but, you know, being able to take someone down, control them on the ground is, you know, one of the most important aspects of the game, I think.
Yeah, I would think that, you know, Volkman should probably be able to win if he wants to, you know, work his wrestling game, which, once again, you know, going back to that Tyson Griffin thing, you know, should he choose to be intelligent,
right,
he should win. I don't really know him as being, you know, much of a striker, though, as opposed to Tyson Griffin, who I've seen stand and bang more. I've only seen Volkman in a couple fights, and, you know, he was kind of on the losing end of those. So I would assume that when he's winning, he's more playing towards his strength. So I'm going to go with him. I think we skipped a fight, though, and that is Mark Munoz against Yushin Okami.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
The co-main event.
Yeah, whatever.
And I'm going to go with Munoz on this one. He's the lower-ranked fighter, but I think he's got the chance to pull off the upset here.
Yeah, and I'm...
He's got solid wrestling and brutal ground and pound.
Right, yeah. I'm trying to remember, like, I guess the last fight of Munoz I remember is him putting it on Kendall Grove pretty badly, right?
Yes, he did. And I'm forgetting who he fought before that, but there was some other guy.
Yeah, I got the internet to work again. So
oh,
good. Like, we're talking about it again. Look
hey.
It up. Yeah,
it was actually the previous fight that sticks out of my head so much, even though I can't remember who his opponent was, but he just destroyed that guy. Yep. Once he got on top of him, was just raining down all kinds of bombs.
Yeah.
And you know, Yushin Okami's got really good grappling too, so he can probably do a good job avoiding the takedowns for a while. But is he going to be able to avoid them all? You know, that remains to be seen. I'm not going to predict that he's going to be able to keep the fight standing for long enough to win.
Right. Now, hopefully memory hasn't failed me, but I believe after, because Yushin Okami took that loss to Chael Sonnen, I believe.
Yeah.
And I think after that he switched up camps or something like that.
Oh.
A bit, or switched up his training, and, you know, who knows if that'll pay off or not. But I know he did look much kind of rejuvenated after that fight, in his comeback fight. Are you thinking of Mark Munoz, was it Ryan Jensen?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, submission punches in the first round. Back at UFC 108.
Yeah, it was painful looking.
Yeah.
I don't even remember Yushin Okami fighting since Chael Sonnen. Who did he? Who did he fight that one?
I'm pretty sure, Dad. Yeah, I think. Man, Lucio Linhares.
Ooh.
That was a TKO.
Yeah, it explains why I don't remember it.
Yes. Fight Night 21 back in March. Yeah, and he looked, you know, improved there, and it was kind of. Well, I think the thing there was he actually got a stoppage, a TKO.
Yeah, he's really kind of a decision fighter for the most
part. Right,
and
that was kind of one of the frustrating things. I know for a while I was like, oh, he's winning, but he's boring, and he's getting decisions, da-da-da-da-da, and, you know, he got a pretty emphatic win in his last
fight.
Yeah,
well, and also not only is he a decision fighter, but a lot of times he kind of slows down in the end.
Hmm.
A lot of people felt that he was beating Rich Franklin and then just kind of gave away the third round because he felt that he had the first two locked up and didn't.
Oops.
Yeah. So I'm not saying that I would necessarily expect that to be an issue, but I don't think that he's got the sprawl game to take Munoz's takedowns, because Munoz has really good takedowns.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a really high-quality wrestler. Yeah, man, this is really close. I think it is going to be a tough fight, but yeah, I mean... I do think with that wrestling edge, or the, you know, the takedown edge there for Munoz, I mean, that could really be the deciding factor. Yeah, yeah, so I'll lean toward Munoz on this.
I do think that Okami is more well-rounded, though. I think he's probably got the better stand-up game, and is probably better on his back. I don't think I can't recall a time I've seen Munoz on his back, other than you know, being completely unconscious. But that doesn't count.
Right. Well, that's kind of always the big question for wrestlers too. Is like, yeah, they've got a good takedown game, and can get, you know, the doubles or the single legs, and, you know, got good ground and pound. But what happens if they get into a bad spot on their back? How do they handle that? But yeah, I mean, just looking at Okami's record, I mean, he's kind of, I think part of it was kind of the UFC's own doing, in that, you know, guys who get kind of boring decisions don't get as much attention. But I mean, he had a good run. But I mean, you know, just looking at his record, I mean, he's only lost recently to Chael Sonnen, and then the Rich Franklin loss back in 07. And before that, it was a little guy named Jake Shields back in 06.
Oh, snap.
At a Rumble on the Rock card. So, yeah, I mean, he's got a pretty solid resume, and I guess it's just really to see if he can, like, step things up and kind of, you know, if that turnaround after the Chael Sonnen fight is going to stick, or how he's going to continue to rebound from that.
It's a pretty similar fighter that he's going against. I think Chael Sonnen is probably a little better of a wrestler, but
right.
Then I think...
he doesn't have the heavy hands.
Yeah, Munoz is going to be better once he's on top.
Yeah.
So, similar fight, not necessarily the same. He'll have a better chance of keeping it standing, but he better keep it standing.
Yeah. All right, very good. You know, kind of looking at the rest of the card, I think those are all the main televised cards. Just kind of looking at the rest of them. I mean, DeMarcus Johnson, Matt Riddle, James Irvin, Igor Pokerjack. Pokerjack? Always good, you know.
Yeah, interesting that James Irvin and Brian Stann are both on the...
Yeah, I mean, James Irvin's really... I mean, he looked really... he looked like he was about to pass out in his last fight. Like, the weight cut was not good to him. I mean, ever since Anderson Silva broke his face, I think he's kind of had some issues. But, yeah, coming off that loss to Alessio Sakara before the other UFC on versus card. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely remember him looking... the weight cut, he looked really rough.
Yeah, and Dana White said, "I don't want to see you at middleweight again, sucker."
Which is, yeah, when your boss is calling you out on that stuff, it's always bad news. And Brian Stann, the...
The Marine.
The Marine.
Yeah.
Is that, that should be his nickname.
It should be, but he's All-American instead. Okay. Which, you know, kind of, but there's a lot of people who are American. You really got to take that one. As far as I know, you're the only Marine.
Yeah, he's a Marine. Work. But, yeah, I think his last fight was lost to Phil Davis back at UFC 109. So, we'll see. I don't know, man. I guess I can kind of see why they're on there, because, I mean, those are guys who have some name value, but I think it's just kind of like they're not necessarily on the downside of their careers, but they've fallen on some rough times recently, fight-wise at least. So, you know, who knows how they're going to rebound, if they can rebound. And I think the UFC always has the propensity to kind of put, you know, guys who have won their last couple fights or on an up, you know, upward trajectory to kind of give them the focus.
Yeah, there's something to be said for that. I see also we got a fight, DeMarcus Johnson against Matt Riddle.
Right.
A couple of guys from the Ultimate Fighter seasons 7 and 9. DeMarcus Johnson almost won season 9, but then he didn't.
Yeah, Matt Riddle, I remember, season 9 was like, I don't remember anything of that season.
I missed a lot of it too, even though we had our Alaska boy to cheer on, but then he lost.
Oh.
And we stopped watching so much. That, and he had that outbreak on his mouth. That was not herpes.
Not different.
Yeah, something else, but it just really looked like it. Yeah, Matt Riddle was in season 7, got into the house by breaking the Spartan-looking guy's jaw horrifically.
Yeah.
And then ended up losing to Tim Crater.
Yeah, and he's got, you know, he's a really young guy as well, too. I mean, he's... I believe. Oh yeah, no. I was looking at his record. He's like, oh, he's coming off of a win. I thought he lost. It's because it was an illegal upkick. So he won the fight, but he lost the battle with an upkick.
Oh, okay.
So, it's pretty rough. I don't think. I think there's some kind of issue. Like during, like, he was having a conversation with his corner and just didn't know what had happened. Like, and that's where they're like, right. So you probably shouldn't be fighting.
Yeah.
But before that, he took a loss to Nick Oshipsak. TKO punches, and then he's, you know, his all of his other pro fights have been in the UFC, and he's got, you know, he's 4-1.
Yeah, he his first professional fight was in the UFC, which is fairly unusual. But he got into the Ultimate Fighter house being 0-0.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, definitely with a guy that young, there's a lot of potential, and, you know, still learning the game, but I don't know. And comparing him to, you know, DeMarcus Johnson, who's 18 fights under his belt professionally, 11-7.
Pretty spotty record, though.
Yeah, I'll see.
A lot of wins, a lot of losses.
Yeah, back-to-back wins recently over Edgar Garcia and Brad Blackburn. Before that, 2 losses, James Wilkes, Ryan Williams. Yeah.
I missed the Brad Blackburn fight, but the Edgar Garcia fight was a pretty fun back-and-forth fight. He got a submission win, I think. I forget what it was.
It says it was a triangle.
Yeah, but it was back and forth. He spent a lot of his time on his back in that fight, and he was going for submissions, and Locke won out eventually. I was fairly impressed by that fight.
All right.
Especially after seeing him just completely get manhandled by James Wilkes. After he'd been talking a lot of game that whole season of The Ultimate Fighter. Man, I hate James Wilkes. I hate him. I don't know what it is about that guy, but I just don't like that guy. And then he just gets his ass kicked, which explains why he doesn't like him.
Right.
Just knew he couldn't beat him.
Yeah, that would do it. I'm just kind of looking at his record, and he's got, you know, obviously, like we said, more experienced stuff. But he kind of notable, he's got a loss to fellow tough alumni Court McGee back in 2007. Lost by submission eating choke.
Yeah, well, Court McGee is a Ultimate Fighter champion.
Yeah.
Unlike you, DeMarcus.
Wow. Got to make it personal, huh? I mean, just looking at this fight, I mean, experience always kind of weighs in the game, and, you know, certainly I talk about not wanting to do MMA math, which is, you know, like, this guy beat this guy, so he should beat this guy as well. But, you know, just, I don't think that applies here, but just, like, looking at the experience here and, you know, I don't think he's, you know, I don't think Johnson's been around so long where he's like, oh, he's got experience, but he's old. That's not the case at all. He's just got more experience, more fights under his belt. I mean, you know, he's only been fighting professionally since 05. So I favor him pretty strongly in this fight, but, we'll see.
Yeah, I'd favor him. Matt Riddle is, he's a good wrestler with heavy hands, but I don't think he really has a whole lot, at least at this point, that I've seen. So, I mean, he may get the takedowns, but then he can also get choked out when he's on top. That wouldn't surprise me at all. So I would also lean towards DeMarcus Johnson in this fight.
All right. Very good. That was all the fights on that card that I kind of had any... We did mention Brian Stann was fighting Mike Massenzio, who I just don't know that much about.
Yeah. That name doesn't even sound familiar to me.
Yeah. Pitcher doesn't help. He's 11-3. Lost to CB Dolloway.
Ouch.
last fight was a...
UFC 92, that was a while ago.
Wow, yeah. The Ultimate 2008.
So, yeah, he hasn't fought since about a year and a half ago. That's interesting.
Yeah, lost TKO punches to CB Dolloway before that. Took a win over Drew McFedries with a Kimura at UFC Fight Night 15 in 08. So,
I'm going to go with Brian Stann on this one.
Yeah, I mean, Stann looked really bad in his last fight against Phil Davis, but that was someone who's got insane wrestling. And someone with that high level of grappling and wrestling ability can really make most fighters look pretty bad.
Yeah.
And, I don't think Stan's a world beater, but he's a pretty solid guy, you know? I mean, I think he'd, take him in this fight.
Yeah. I like him a lot better now that the WEC isn't overhyping him anymore. I like Marines, but shut up, guys.
Well, Tim Kennedy in Strikeforce is now the token military guy. I don't know if you guys heard, he used to be a sniper or something.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We should talk about that. He's getting a title shot.
Ooh,
right on. Well, he's very patient.
Yeah. But is that with Tom Berenger a lot? Yeah. Billy Zane?
Ooh, yeah. Hey, yeah. The Zanester.
Oh, goodness. So as far as the UFC on Versus goes, I mean, Big John's back. Going to be some good fights, probably.
Cool. I hope he gets to the main event.
Wonder what the crowd reaction is going to be like. It's always weird. Like, how many sports are there is like crowd, audible, noticeable crowd reaction to like a ref being introduced? I mean,
none.
Well, there's that one guy in the WWF who screwed Brett.
And there is that that World Cup, referee.
Yeah.
So three.
Who's to say what a goal is, anyways? First of all, just because there's like a line and it's very obvious when a ball goes into a goal doesn't mean. Yeah. I mean, are you supposed to be like looking when that happens?
Besides, nobody likes England.
Yeah.
I was rooting for them after America lost.
Oh, all right.
I'm racist. I'm a xenophobe.
You're a linguist.
Like, oh, I only root for teams that I can understand.
You can understand the English?
Well, a little bit.
Tell me you can't be smarty. See? I told you. That was spot on, everybody, by the way.
All
so get in the back
like
of
that.
The queue, you poofters. All right, well, this has been fun. Anything else?
I guess we could talk about the whole Strikeforce. You know how Strikeforce was going to like, hey, we're going to have a middleweight tournament for a championship. That's not happening. They're just having a championship fight, which is fine. And it sounds like they're going to do a tournament, and maybe the winner of that tournament will get a fight against the champion who's...
Got a lot of tournaments coming up, huh? They got like these big plans that aren't really fleshing out at all.
Yeah, well, I think part of the problem with the middleweight thing was like they're like, we should have a tournament.
Yeah!
Oh, like, half of our guys are suspended for fighting after a fight. Maybe we should hold off on that. Okay.
Well, I think their suspensions are about up.
Well,
I just recently saw Mayhem twittering some smack at Nick Diaz.
Yeah, that's a fight I want to see, by the way. But, yeah, no, I think they're still serving suspensions. They got another month or so. Because I think they were, like, 90 days. But, like, it was, like, It was really a weird situation. I'm sure Dog had a bunch of reporting on it. Basically, it was like contingent upon when the fighter signed and acknowledged that they were being suspended.
Ooh.
So it wasn't like any
90 days from when it happened.
Right. It wasn't 90 days from when it happened or anything like that. It was like the athletic commissioner was like, all right, so you guys are suspended. Here's your letters, and the suspension begins once you guys sign them and mail them back.
Damn.
So, yeah, but I think it's until fall a lot of those fighters are going to be out. So from what I've heard, Scott Coker's putting it out there. Yeah, there's going to be a middleweight fight for the belt between Jacare and Tim Kennedy. Jacare, you know, I just told Space Island who he beat last, but Tim Kennedy's coming off a win over Trevor Prangley.
Was it Matt Lindland? Was that his last fight?
Oh,
or
you know,
has he fought since then?
He's fought since then.
Okay. Man, he whooped Matt Lindland's ass.
Yeah, he looked really solid against him. Yeah, I feel bad. I'm totally spacing out on who he fought last. And then, you know, they're still figuring out who's going to be in that middleweight tournament. And in theory, I would assume the winner of that tournament would then get a shot at whoever is holding the title.
That seems reasonable.
And, you know, I think I like tournaments. I mean, it's certainly, you know, the one-night UFC tournaments were kind of goofy fun. But, you know, I think it helps what it does, kind of establishes a division that doesn't have, like, you know, it builds familiarity with fighters who don't necessarily aren't well-known. You know, it's an easy way to, I guess Jacare's, well, I really thought Jacare had fought since the Matt Lindland fight.
Mm. Well, I agree in a sense and disagree with you. I think a tournament is a great way to establish a division.
Okay.
Like, to start things off. But I don't really like tournaments in divisions that are already established. Like, say the UFC at welterweight right now. There would be, you know, if they had a tournament, it would be cool when it's happening, mm-hmm. but then afterwards you've got one guy who won a tournament and then, like, seven dudes who are all coming off a loss.
Right. Yeah, it's like, I guess long-term is like, yeah, so... Which is kind of why I like this idea of having a number one contenders tournament instead of, like, a contender, like a tournament for the belt. Because if you do the tournament for the belt and then you have a winner, like, so who does he fight? Because all the legit fighters were in the tournament. We don't have anyone else to fight him. Whereas if you have a champion and then you have a guy who fights his way to number one contendership, and then you have that fight and you have time to rebuild some of the guys other who were in the tournaments, kind of, you know, rebuild from there, that sort of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, well, I think that's good for, like, the mini tournaments, like the yeah. four-man tournaments that happen a lot. You know, just have a guy, and that's, you know, essentially the same as working your way up to a title anyway. If
right.
you get to a position where you're in a four-man tournament, then you're probably just in a position where you're two fights away from a title anyway.
Right, yeah, so whether it's official or not, that's a good point. Yeah, Jacare totally has fought since beating Matt Lindley. He beat the internet lied to me, but Wikipedia knows somehow. It was Joey Villasenor.
Oh.
I'm talking about the fight. Yeah, it was lots of takedowns. And
That's how he's going to win.
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. I mean, Jacare is kind of what they call a jiu-jitsu ace.
Yes,
and
that's what they call it.
We talk about, you know, like, you know, guys being good on the ground all the time, and I think it's like, you know, overplayed. I mean, he's like really good at jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, him and Demian Maia are probably the top, like, jiu-jitsu guys in the sport right now.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm looking forward to that fight. I'm not sure if they have a date announced for that, but it's always interesting just seeing with the growing pain Strikeforce has, you know. So they, like, have these great ideas, and then they don't work out. And then they have bad ideas, and those work out. And everyone's like, boo, bad idea. Don't side Dave Bautista. Stuff like that.
Oh, I'm happy to see that. I just don't want them to give Fedor a title shot.
Oh, that'd be weird. And, yeah, guys lose and get a title shot and all kinds of craziness.
Yeah,
but,
they're in a position where, you know, as much as we nerds out here can whine about them doing the circus shows, they've got no reason not to. They're not the UFC. The UFC has to be above that.
Yeah.
Strikeforce doesn't have to be above that. So if you can get a name who wants to fight, you know, like I said, we can bitch about it all we want, but it's probably pretty smart business on their part.
Mm-hmm.
Signing a guy like Dave Bautista, who is a big, strong, muscly dude, you know, worst thing that happens is he wins a fight, you know, and then they're going to have to give him another one. But odds are he's just going to get his face smashed and then sent packing.
Yeah. Yeah. Really quick, going back to that middleweight fight, just because I was like, I don't know when that fight's happening. It looks like it's scheduled for the Strikeforce Houston card.
Ooh.
Texas. Yeah, not Houston, Alaska, which would be awesome.
That would be awesome. I'd make the drive.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a big market up there for it, maybe.
You could shoot up some fireworks, too.
Yeah. Yeah, the Toyota Center in Houston, Texas. It's the, I believe, being headlined by the King Mo versus Fei Zhao. Light heavyweight fight, and then, yeah, middleweight Tim Kennedy versus Jacques Array.
Who's King Mo fighting?
Rafael Fei Zhao Cavalcante.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't recognize the Fei Zhao part.
I'm just glad that guy has a nickname, is all I got to say. Cavalcante is not too hard to say.
Yeah, and that part actually sounds familiar to me.
Yeah. But, he just had a pretty impressive win over Antoine Britt. We're getting ahead of ourselves now. But, yeah, so, I mean, two title fights, and I think that's the max you want to have for a card, Strikeforce and the UFC. You know, two title fights at max.
Yeah, especially if you have a two-hour time limit.
Yeah. So, I believe this is going to be a Showtime card, which is nicer. Like, it just seems like there's so much more pressure for Strikeforce when they're on CBS, because not only do they have to just, like, you know, put on good fights, but, like, they're representing MMA to the world. Or, like, old people who forgot that CSI isn't on tonight. But, yeah, so it always seems that the Strikeforce cards that are on Showtime kind of shake out better. So we'll get some, with the Jake Shields exodus, we'll get some closure on that chapter in Strikeforce, get a new middleweight champ, because, you know, we've talked about before how meaningful are the belts for Strikeforce. You know, they're still building, like, the credibility and all. And we'll see how it plays out. Hopefully we'll get some more... things will settle down there, and if that tournament comes to fruition, then we'll have a little bit more to talk about later on down the road.
Awesome. Nick Diaz against Mayhem. Who you got?
Oh, goodness gracious. Yeah, we saw that just started bubbling up on the internets on Monday, right? It was Nick Diaz talking smack about Mayhem and their post-fight brawl, and Mayhem hitting him back on Twitter where it hurts. Ugh.
Yeah.
Man, I don't... I mean... Mayhem Miller's hard to finish.
Extremely hard to finish.
Like, that's, like, I'm trying to, like, look at the fight in my mind. I'm like, okay, I don't see, like, Nick Diaz is hard to finish, too, like, unless he gets cut, but he's had the, like, surgery for that. That kind of, you know, like, that was his kind of big surprise and loss to KJ Nunes was because of a cut, and he's had that fixed up since then. Maybe you don't see too many people talking about finishing Nick Diaz either. I'd probably favor Nick Diaz in that fight. But, I mean, let's be honest. The build-up to the fight is what everyone would want.
Yeah.
Because, like, man, Midler would be all being all, like, Mayhem, and Nick Diaz would be like, man, I hate that guy. If you came in Compton, we'd totally shoot him.
I'd keep it straight gangsta.
Yeah. Well, let's be fair that Nick Diaz does hold one win over Mayhem, and that is at the CBS card of Strikeforce.
Yeah. Yeah, 7-on-1 advantage will do that. I think the best thing about this whole, like, back and forth, and I'm sure it's going to get better over the week or whatever, and hopefully they do, like, you know, actually get a fight out of this hype, just because I think that would be, like, an easy sell for Strikeforce, honestly, and actually a decent fight, not just like, oh, let's capitalize on this stuff, but, you know, actually, like, a decent, somewhat relevant fight. Nope, I lost my train of thought.
Damn it, Tobin.
I'm like, the best thing to come out of this is I forget.
It's going to be an awesome fight. It's going to be, like, so dramatic. Right. And
oh, okay, I remembered. Sorry. The best part about it so far has been, like, Nick Diaz is like, watch the video. I didn't throw the first punch. And he totally did throw the first punch. And even if, like, he was, like, a half second late, he threw, like, the second, third, fifth, sixth punch, and then, like, a kick. So, like, that's splitting hairs at that point. So, I don't know. It's, like, there's that great freeze frame photo floating around the internet where it's, like, right as the brawl's happening, you're like, Nick Diaz, like, has an arm on Mayhem Miller's shoulder, and he's got, like, angry face on, and you see him, like, throwing the punch, and you're like,
yeah.
About that. Like, no one wins in this argument.
I think it'll be a fun fight. I think the only unfortunate thing about it would be that it would have to take place at middleweight. I know that Mayhem has fought at welterweight in the past. He fought in the UFC against George St. Pierre a long time ago at welterweight, but I don't know that he's done it at all since then. I don't know if he can still make the cut. And Nick Diaz is the Strikeforce welterweight champion, so that's kind of lame.
Yeah.
It'd have to be another catchweight bout. But at the same time, like, who the hell is Nick Diaz going to fight at 170? This suspension that he's got going on... is actually probably good for him because he's got no one else to fight, you know. That'll give them at least time to either come up with somebody for him to fight or, you know, it won't. But as of now, it's just like, Nick Diaz versus random guy in Japan.
Yeah. Oh, look, he beat up Sakurai. Great.
Yeah.
It should be noted, I mean, Diaz has fought at middleweight before, but it's been a while, man, because he Frank Smith and Scott Smith. He fought, and those were both middleweight.
Yeah, I mean, he can do it. It's just like...
It's weird when you have a champion and one, you know, yeah, who knows. It's a super fight is what it's going to be.
Super fight. For the trash talkers.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. Go Mayhem. Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see how that shakes out over the next couple weeks. But, yeah, I mean, Strikeforce has a built-in feud there. And I think we talked about that, like, right after that CBS Strikeforce brawl. And, like, you know a fight's going to, like, an actual MMA fight's going to come out of this once, like, everything settles and all the suspensions are served. Like, they're going to be like, yeah. They're going to...
Remember this? And then they'll show the clip from back then.
Yeah.
I didn't throw the first punch. You liar!
You're a lying liar, liar.
No, that wasn't me in that video.
Yeah. That was my brother. My brother.
Maybe he counts the mayhem shove to
right.
Yeah,
to
maybe that
Jake
was
Shields.
The first strike.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I know Jake Shields got in there pretty fast, but he doesn't have good stand-up, so it definitely was not a punch.
he was doing the Dan Severn slap, maybe.
It was like a...
Grab your face!
It was like a fist push or something. I don't know what it was. But, yeah. It
was awesome is what it was.
Yeah.
These things happen, ladies and gentlemen. This happens all the time. Nothing to worry about.
See here, totally.
Gentlemen, you are representing the sport on CBS. Please stop.
The home of How I Met Your Mother.
Jeez, they just, like, run out of commercial breaks? Or what? Could have been a... All right. Whatever. I think we've talked about this situation well enough. Any other interesting MMA news? I'd look around the internet some more, but the computer keeps crashing on me.
Lame.
Yeah, the internet doesn't like me looking at things.
What, didn't I hear about Tito Ortiz and Matt Hamill?
That's true.
That?
They'll be fighting each other, which Tito is not too happy about because they're friends, more or less.
Yeah.
Tito was Matt Hamill's coach on Ultimate Fighter 3, and I guess the two sparked a bond, being a couple of wrestling homies.
Mm.
But... you know, it's not a bad fight other than that. Tito says this is going to be the first fight in a long time where he hasn't talked any smack. So we'll see about that. I wouldn't be surprised if he just manufactures some hype.
Screw that deaf guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, he'll just start clapping. He can't hear that. I got some inspiration for you.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll come up with something to be pissed off about between now and the time the fight actually happens.
He's a poor speller.
I have no comment.
Yeah, none? Yeah, he'll come up with something. There will be some smack talk, because this is Tito we're talking about. Nobody really cares to see his fight if he isn't talking, because the fights themselves have never really been... I mean, even when he was the man... They weren't really all that exciting.
How'd he get himself into this situation where he has to fight one of his friends? You know, it seems like there's a lot of friendships in the UFC, and a lot of the times they're respected, aren't they?
No, I mean they don't necessarily fight, but Dana White totally does not respect friendships. He's
yeah,
like every press conference, and it comes up, he's like, "No, they're gonna fight. I'm gonna make them fight. This is a business. They're gonna fight," and then like half the time they don't. But you know, the sentiment's there, and I guess you know this one he actually finally got. Got one to come together.
Well, the thing that kills me about this one is that there's no real reason why they need to fight. Like, they're probably at about the same level. Matt Hamill has certainly looked a lot better in recent outings. But then again, he hasn't really fought the level of competition that Tito fought. I mean, you look at Tito's last several fights, and they're all against former champions. I think you have to go back to... Ken Shamrock to be the last non-champion he's fighting. Even Ken Shamrock was a kind of a champ back in the 90s. So, I mean, everyone Tito has been fighting is an upper-level guy, while Matt Hamill has been looking really good, other than the John Jones fight, but he's been fighting guys who were lower tier. So, I mean, they're around the same level, but at the same time, like, there's no real reason why they would have to fight necessarily. It's not like a situation where... Pride had a few years back where, like, Vanderlei Silva was the champion, and then Shogun was the number one guy, and then their best friends and training partners. And they'll never fight. It's not like this fight has to be put together for a reason. That's what seems strange to me about it. I'm all for, you know, making friends fight each other if there's a reason for it. But this one seems like, you know, they could have just as easily replaced Matt Hamill with random other guy that's around the same level as Matt Hamill.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's not forget, Tito Ortiz has already fought his best friend, Chuck Liddell.
So. They're good buddies, man. They pee on each other in T-shirt form.
But, I was kind of surprised to hear this fight announced. I guess it's signed for October or something like that. But, I kind of had just like this... it's a decent fight, I guess. But, yeah, it was just kind of the reaction when I saw it. I was like, oh, that's weird. Why is this fight...
fight I would much rather see happen and would be fairly related is Tito Ortiz against Michael Bisping. Because think of the trash talk on that one.
Yeah, that'd be pretty solid, right? I'd like that.
Yeah! Get in the back of the queue, Pufter! Yeah! She's fit.
Wanker's also a good one.
Wanker?
Yeah.
That bird's fit, bullocks.
Tosser?
Dog's bullocks.
You tosser.
Tosser, whoa.
Come on,
man, I hope we don't have any British fans of this.
Not anymore.
Podcast. We just said all their naughty words.
And shag.
God, do they even say that anymore?
Did they ever say that?
Apparently that's a pretty dirty word. Yeah. You know, dirtier than some of the ones that we got here that we equate it to.
I guess. Speaking of MMA news...
Shag.
Lyoto Machida and Rampage Jackson actually happening. I think that was confirmed last week.
That's right.
Awesome.
Forgot about that. That's a good fight. I think that's a fight that stylistically... Machida would have the advantage on. You know, he likes to kick. Rampage doesn't like to block kicks.
He blocks him with his legs. It's fine.
But, you know, Rampage hits like a son of a bitch, and Lyoto Machida just got knocked out for the first time.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the question there. Is like, was that like a freak occurrence, or is this when we find out that Lyoto Machida has a horrible chin, and that's why he's so elusive?
Well, not only that, but also sometimes people react poorly to their first loss.
Yeah,
you know, we've seen Rampage lose and bounce back, so we know what he's made of.
Yeah, speaking of people who react poorly to losses, Rampage Jackson might have had a little incident with a monster truck. A
little bit.
Yeah.
Little bit.
But, you know,
too many energy drinks, man.
He did great in the octagon afterwards, though. Yeah. He whooped Vanderlei Silva's ass after that.
And then he made the A-team, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Everything's cool. It's like it never happened.
Fine.
It didn't happen.
What? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. He's not on probation. Yeah, so I think we all like that fight. I mean, that's the thing is, like, in the light heavyweight division in the UFC, is just kind of like, so let's get some good fights together while we wait for Shogun to heal from his surgery injury thing.
Yeah, and then I guess Rashad's just going to chill.
Yeah, I mean, I have mixed feelings about interim belts. But when someone's going to be out for this long and you know they're going to be out for this long, either take the belt off them and then just like, be like, oh yeah, and you get your title shot once you're healed. Like, if it's a set time and you know it's going to be a while, either, you know, I guess I'm more in favor of stripping someone of the belt and then just be like, yeah, you get it when you get a fight when you come back. Because, like, the interim belt is just kind of weird, and then you have to have the unification match, and I don't know what happens to the other belt once it gets... Do they throw it in a trash can and burn it, or
they melt the two together?
Yeah, they
make a super belt.
Yeah, okay, that's not sure, but it's a weird situation, and I don't think there's been any indication whether there's going to be any sort of anything else than just waiting till Shogun gets back to have the fight with him and Rashad fight for the belt, and then hopefully they'll have some number one contenders lined up by the time that happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot can happen between now and then. I think John Jones is probably going to have a few fights between now and
March. He will have conquered the world, yes.
Yeah, I mean, he could be ready for a title shot. Who knows? I don't know who they're going to put up against after he steamrolls Matyushenko, which I fully expect. I think Dana White probably does, too.
Mm.
I mean, who knows who he's going to have after that? He could have a pretty high-ranked contender. Or he could have, you know, Matt Hamill again. I don't know. They can do whatever they want with him. Yeah. John Jones against Tito.
Yeah. That would be an interesting matchup only because of the trash talk aspect. Because I guess John Jones just doesn't like people to talk trash. Like, I know he had some issues with Brandon.
That's right. Blair. Yeah, he was pretty upset about that.
Yeah, and then...
Ooh.
Yeah, so it's
he wants to keep it clean.
Right. It's interesting, you know, like the young fighters.
Doesn't have a very thick skin, huh?
I guess. I don't know, man. But just the young fighters who are, you know, got all this potential, but still learning the mental game, you know. Maybe
sure.
a Tito Ortiz can get inside the head there. And
I bet he could, too.
Make John Jones cry or something. I don't know. That probably won't happen.
Well,
no,
yeah, I mean,
it'll just make him break his eye.
He's relatively young, and he was probably just bred to be, like, this awesome athlete.
Yeah,
you know?
His brother's a pretty, no slouch, I think he's a pretty quality football player, I believe. I'm just, like, making stuff up at this point.
That's what I've heard. I think he has two brothers that are college football players.
Oh, good. Wikipedia tells me he's a fighter. John Jones.
Oh, thank God.
Fighter.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
Case closed. Oops. Fedor cheats on his wife. And John Jones is a fighter.
One of those is true.
Yeah, well, actually, I don't think Fedor is cheating anymore because, you know, he's not as popular in Russia anymore. His mistress has left him.
Oh,
Wikipedia's not helping me at all with John Jones' background. His personal life is like two sentences long.
Right, exactly.
You see where it says background right there, Tobin?
That's different.
Right, he was bred in a test tube to be this awesome athlete.
Next to Todd Duffy, right?
Right next to Todd Duffy and the guy from Rocky IV, you know? that's all they do, is they hook him up to a respirator, and they shock him, and they make him into an ultimate fighting machine.
The difference between John Jones and those other two guys you mentioned, though, is that John Jones does actually have some cybernetic implants. I believe his spleen and his kidney are actually both... machine.
There you go. See? Welcome to the collective, Tobit.
So he's basically like one or two implants away from being a punch kicker.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah. Community reference. Look at that.
Ah.
All right, so I just Googled John Jones' brother in hopes that that'll help me.
Hopefully that'll... Why are we looking for this?
Because I said something about him, like, yeah, so his brother's a pretty good athlete, and I'm just that guy who I'm like... I know in the back of my head that, like, John Jones' brother is, like, a good athlete, and I think he's a football player, but I have that, like, tinge of doubt that, like, maybe I just made that up.
Yeah. Maybe you did. Maybe you're walking over here to my side.
It's called verifying sources, is what I'm doing.
I think what you were thinking is he was a mathlete. He's actually really good at algebra.
A mathlete.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tobin is not impressed by my humor.
That was actually it. I'm not a laugher. I apologize. Yeah. All right, so, the Jones family. They're athletic.
Yes. Congratulations, Jones family.
They're explosive, too.
Yeah. By the way, on the UFC on Versus card, do we want to place how many...
Over under on Jones?
What's the number on explosive and athletic references during the John Jones fight?
All right. Let's say... Well, all right, just during the fight or during the entire night?
I guess in reference to... Yeah, let's go with the entire night in reference to John Jones.
Oh, okay. That's a big difference.
Yeah, that is... That's like triple. Yeah. That would be like a huge difference, yeah. But I think just kind of... Because that could be fun because they're going to be hyping him because he's in the main event, so they'll...
Yeah.
But like, up next, after the break, the explosive and athletic John Jones.
Now, do they have to say both of them at the same time for it to count?
Ooh,
I'd say... Like, if they just call him explosive?
I'd say within 10 seconds of each other. Like, whoa. It doesn't have to be explosive and athletic, but what if it's explosive, and then, like, within 10 seconds, they also say he's athletic.
Okay.
That's like a half point. Let's just...
No, then we'll half
game.
Point it. Okay.
That's like a half shot.
I will go... Now, is this Price is Right? We're going to keep on stacking this. Closest without going over, or...
Yeah, let's go with that.
Okay.
Closest without going over. Let's make it a little...
I'm
going
to go with six.
All right.
Six times. I'm feeling conservative.
All right.
I will go for... Price is Right, strategy number one, and go with seven.
Son of a bitch, man.
I'm gonna go high. You know, I'm gonna go nice double digits. I'll go for a nice 10. I'll go a nice even 10.
Nice 10.
Yeah. All right. So we're gonna have to turn the volume up on the UFC card so we can keep track, and we'll have the results next week.
All right, we'll let you know how we did.
This is our first audio choke bet.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And then whoever wins gets to be the king of the podcast next episode.
Okay.
We'll get a little crown.
Do we get Rockstar in here? Just start pouring it?
Yeah.
I'm King Greg! All right, well, this will be fun. So, yeah.
I also watch the fights, I guess.
Yeah, oh, yeah, we'll do that.
We don't keep scorecards, our own scorecards during the fights, but we definitely keep scorecards for how many references to explosives on athletic there are in a UFC event with John Jones on it.
Yeah. I also think that John Jones will win.
Right, yeah, I think we're all... Matt, are we all agreed? John Jones probably...
Yes, absolutely.
The janitor.
I am totally on that boat.
All right.
Does John Jones have a nickname?
Bones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Much better than the janitor.
No, because the janitor mops up the competition.
He mops all day
long.
Yeah,
he's going to be mopping up his blood on Saturday.
Oh, goodness. So, yeah, it's weird to be back to, like, the, hey, there's fights to talk about schedule. Like, we had a nice run there where we're just like, hey, we can talk about whatever we want.
We're scared. Let's go. Yeah. Let's get to have some organization. So, thanks for sticking with us, and we will be back next week with all this new information and breakdownages, and we'll see how the Price is Right goes with Explosive and Athletic. Download us on iTunes, visit us on Facebook and Twitter, just look up The Audio Choke, and leave a comment here at MMATorch.com, go to the forum, and as always...
I'm Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
And I'm Matt Collins. We'll catch you next time.
Audio Choke.
Happy birthday, Tobin.
Yay.
Happy birthday, Tobin.
Happy birthday, Matt.
Hey, thanks, Tobin.
Yeah, happy birthday
eventually, Greg.
yeah,
what is your birthday?
It is the day before Halloween.
Okay.
So it's not for a little bit.
It'd be really crazy if, like, the Audio Choke
if it was
gang
tomorrow.
Had back-to-back-to-back.
Yeah! Birthday buddies forever!
So now I'm just going to go out there and say this, that I know that we're playing Price is Right rules, but if they say less than six times, I declare myself the winner.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, might as well. Someone's got to win.
Without going over. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, someone's got to win.
Someone's got to win.
All right.